The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. How you doing today? Welcome to the week, Monday, April 15th. Would that be called the Ides of April? Like they talk about the Ides of March, we always think of mid-March. I'll have to look up what the Ides actually is defined. I don't think it's the 15th. Necessarily, but it is tax day, the day in which we, the land of the free, confess our financial sins to Uncle Sam. And gee, it's kind of funny you think about that until the creation of the Federal Reserve back in the early 1900s. Gosh, we never had to do things like that. In fact, you almost rarely had much interaction with the federal government. You almost never saw your Congress critter. You didn't really care that much because the federal government just didn't. Well, I mean, there couldn't be any connection between the income tax, which, of course, was first sold to the people as, it's only going to be going after the rich. You don't think there's any connection between the income tax and the growth of the bloat, huh? To have the current Leviathan that we now find ourselves concerned with from time to time. No connection with that, right? That's right. You know, all you have to do is keep singing, I'm proud to be an American, because at least I know I'm free. But freedom isn't free. And we find that out every April 15th. I don't know. You know, it's interesting. Every April 15th around tax time, I always get numerous people that are writing me. And there are people who have written books about it that the 13th Amendment really wasn't passed properly, and I would tend to agree with that. Same with the one that ended up having directly elected senators rather than the state legislature, you know, actually appointing the senators, you know, all those kind of things. And they make a really good case. And there was another great book a number of years ago, you know, the income tax, how income is not really defined the way that we're thinking of income. And, well, one of the best people I ever talked about that a number of years ago was Irwin Schiff. I interviewed Irwin Schiff a number of years ago, and you may even have known Peter Schiff. Peter Schiff, his son, is still doing a lot of financial conversations. Kind of a permabull is what he's all about. But Irwin Schiff wrote a great book about the income tax and why the whole thing was just a BS. In fact, he believed it. And he died in prison, a political prisoner, as far as I'm concerned. Irwin Schiff did that. And every year around, I get all these people that are saying, hey, I had this new book about, showing that income is not income, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, you know, I would agree with you that when you actually look at the letter of the law and what this constitutional republic was all about, you're absolutely right. And if you don't pay, you will die in prison. See, Irwin Schiff was the test case, essentially. And, you know, he had all sorts of people reading his book. I read his book. In fact, I bought his book. I want to say this was like mid-2000, maybe 2005, 2006. And he was a great interview. I wish I still had the interview. I don't think I was podcasting, you know, back in those days. So I don't know if I saved that or not. I'd have to look back. That might be worth looking in through my notes about this. But he made the case how the income tax, as it is practiced in the United States of America, the land of the free, is illegal. And I couldn't disagree with what he was talking about legally. But of course, he was shot down at every time because the system, as we have well known at this point, the United States system has corroded to the point where all that matters is that, hey, we guts to get paid. We guts to get paid, and you're going to pay. And no, it's never. We can talk about we're going to get the rich to pay their share. No, you're going to pay your share according to what they say. So I always look at Income Tax Day, and you listen to all the people that are so anxious and lining up, Do you ever think, is this what a supposed free people should be like? Totally cowed about their federal government, about what they owe or what they don't owe? Is that something that a free people should have, an income tax? I think it's worthy of some conversation if you feel like kicking it in there. You know, every year I like to bring this up. And by the way, I paid the feds $1,800. In fact, my kicker completely went. My kicker from the state of Oregon completely went to pay my federal income tax bill. So, hey, listen, I'm telling you, I paid it because I remember Irwin Schiff. Irwin Schiff, who was a smarter guy than probably, five of me put together. And I'm reasonably okay, reasonably intelligent, smart guy. He ended up dying in prison for his beliefs. I always remember that. He's like a political prisoner is what this is all about. And the courts would never really look at the questions that he would raise about the definitions of what income really is. Because, you see, the way income was always defined up until the 1900s or the later, once they got the income tax, is that when you would go to work and trade your labor, your limited time on earth for money, that was not considered income. It was a different classification. And so Irwin Schiff went in that direction. So it's just something to think about on income tax day. Maybe you don't have to file income tax. Maybe you're retired and you don't have to worry about such things. But, when I see Americans getting all anxious on tax day, where, oh, I got to file an extension. Oh, I got to do this. Oh, I got to do this. It's like, how can people who are told they are free and the freest people in the world be forced to confess their financial sins every year to the federal government? How can you consider yourself free? That's one question I would bring up to you this morning. All right. Go ahead and have at it if you want. You can call me and tell me what you think. 770-5633-770-KMED. No matter what they say, it's always about the money, isn't it? And they say, well, taxes are what we pay for. This is the other one I love. Taxes are what we pay for a civilized society. So a civilized society is built first and foremost on the big mob stealing from you. And if you don't give what they think you owe, then you're in big trouble. And maybe you die in prison like Irwin Schiff did, who just wrote a book about why the income tax didn't apply. But anyway, just something to think about. 770-563-3770-KMED. It's the price we pay for a free society. and we started from theft right from the beginning. All right, let's see. Let's talk about what's some of the other theft we have going on this morning. Let's see. Vicki Aldos reporting, Daily Courier, Grants Pass City Council scheduled to consider a homeless resource center. I'm sure we'll have to be taxing and feeing ourselves once again. And 11:45 a.m. Monday, Vicki writes, counselors will hold presentations from Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development. So ready. Boy, that's a racket. The Small Business Development Center and the Grants Pass and Josephine County Chamber of Commerce. And then they will figure whether to approve a permit for the Mobile Integrative Navigation Team to operate a daytime resource center for homeless people on property near Bi-Mart. And the resource center will provide basic health care, food, clothing, showers, laundry, cleaning, visits with peer mentors for addiction issues, computers to help with job and housing searches. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one, Grants Pass City Council. Yeah, computers to help with job and housing searches. How many of the chronic homeless have made this a lifestyle? I had to put it that way, but you wonder sometimes. It doesn't matter how many computers you put out there. If you're a fentanyl or a heroin addict, you're probably not going to be able to hold down a job. That is still what nobody wants to. Well, you know what's going on. This is just what I was talking about last week. City of Medford, Ashland, Grants Pass, all the cities have to pay the ransom. This is the ransom model, which has been set up in order to have the courts leave you be a little bit, because the tyrannical courts have decided that there is some fundamental right to be able to sleep in the parks that you pay for. That's essentially what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said. You know, that's what we've been battling all this time. And so I'm not blaming the city of Grants Pass or the city of Medford or anybody else. In fact, Medford, one of the reasons why Medford ended up prevailing and they got rid of that one homeless civil rights case that had been filed against them. The federal court said, well, the city of Medford has done enough. They have enough shelter available for all the people. In other words, the city of Medford paid the ransom. They paid the homeless industrial complex racket. The city of Grants Pass has not yet paid enough of the homeless industrial complex racket. And hence, Wednesday, they will decide if they were going to pay the ransom in order for the courts to maybe roll off them a little bit. Once again, land of the free. Land of the free for certain people. Yeah. It's 622 at KMED, KCMD. We'll talk about some of the other headlines here, too, this morning. Join the conversation, 770-5633, if you want to join in here. And this is the Bill Myers Show.
Siskiyou Pump Service focuses on customers getting fresh, clean water from field to tap. Here's a recent review from Jennifer from Lark's Petals and Stem, a local flower farm.
Their knowledge, cost-effective watering system saved us a ton of money for our cut flower operations. They have friendly service and are community-oriented partners. It's nice to have a local family business helping our local family business. Thank you so much, Siskiyou Pump Service.
Providing fresh water for Rogue Valley residents for over 50 years. Visit SiskiyouPump.com.
What's it like to truly be part of a team? To know that when you need them most, your team members will be there for you. This is Lisa from Kelly's Automotive Service in Grants Pass in Medford, and I believe that's what we have. I see our work family show up for each other and Dave and I in ways I never could have imagined. If you're a technician who does not want a quota for upsells, you truly love helping people and you want to be part of something bigger, we would love to talk to you. We're Kelly's Automotive Service, where it's more than a tagline when we say we service your vehicle, but take care of you.
Hi, it's John at Welburn's Weapons. The only thing better than shooting is shooting with a suppressor. Welburn's is Southern Oregon's suppressor headquarters, stocking models from Silencer Co., Dead Air, Griffin Armament, Rugged, Q, Thunderbeast, and many more. And we can order practically any suppressor on the market. Check in with us for monthly incentives to save on suppressors, too. Come see the suppressor experts. Welburn's Weapons on Crater Lake Highway, just south of White City.
Two Dogs Fabricating knows trailers. They sell trailers and repair trailers. So if you'd like your trailer inspected, bring it to the dogs and they'll sniff it out. Two Dogs will check the axles, hitch, tongue, lights, bed, brakes, and more to make sure your trailer's roadworthy. Most trailers on the road are fine, but it's good to have it checked out once a year. They'll scrutinize crucial welds for corrosion and cracks too. And if you need any repairs, you'll get a quick, reasonable estimate. Two Dogs Fabricating on Ryan Way, off Sage in Medford.
If you want to enjoy everything an active and vibrant senior community has to offer, the Springs at Anna Maria Medford is the right lifestyle option for you. Life is easier living among friends and neighbors in stylish private apartments with large balconies, all while fully supported by our team of dedicated caregivers and service professionals. The Springs at Anna Maria is located in a quiet neighborhood close to Rogue Regional Hospital. Call to schedule a tour of the independent and assisted living community, 541-774-1822.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided. By Dish.
Hi, this is Mark from Jay Austin, and I'm on KMED and KCMD.
626 on the Bill Myers Show. It's tax day. It's perfect. The ZZ Top bumper just got paid. Just got paid today. And the feds are here to take it. Like I said, I paid the federal government. I paid my fair share. In fact, I took my kicker from the Oregon tax refund, for having overpaid the state apparently all these years, and I gave it right to Uncle Sam. So you can't say, you can't come after me, Fed coppers. Of course, you'll come after me for something else, I would imagine. I guess that would be, really what is going on. But can you be a free people? Can we be a free people as long as you have an income tax? At a Federal Reserve Bank, we're looking at right now. I think it's a reasonable question. I interviewed Erwin Schiff, Peter Schiff's father, a number of years ago. He ended up dying in prison, and he wrote a book about why the income tax was completely illegal. And I think as a legal matter, he's absolutely right. But I think that freedom in the income tax system that we have here is has been such a necessary fake job put up by the situation. The the same situation that that tells you, yeah, you have the First Amendment except for hate speech, right? You know, those kind of things and various other arguments that that we can have. Yeah, you know, and Second Amendment works. It's really great. Yeah, you can have a firearm, but you just can't use it anywhere. You can't take it anywhere. And the federal government should be involved in that purchase. And oh, by the way, yeah, you have a Fourth Amendment right to protect yourself from investigation. Well, wait a minute. FISA court. We got to do that. Terror. You know. So, you know how we're talking Friday? Do we deserve to be free? I don't know. Maybe the income tax is another symptom of that. Hey, Tom, how you doing? Thanks for calling back. What are you thinking this morning?
Well,
huh?
Yeah, you were talking about ransom from the cities, but, you know, in a way, paying the taxes, a ransom, I just looked on the dictionary here, and it says a sum of money or other payment demanded or paid for the release of a prisoner. So I guess we're all prisoners in the great federal mafia.
Because if you don't pay, like Irwin Schiff did not pay, like Irwin Schiff. And did you ever talk about or read Irwin Schiff's book that he put out about the income tax?
Oh, yeah. What was the title? Well, didn't it say Federal Mafia? But it had a dramatic picture on the front. You know, I think an octopus over the White House or something like that. I mean, and, you know, at the same conference, which I went to in San Jose, on the income tax, I did happen to stop at the booth where Red Beckman was there, and they had the book, The Law That Never Was. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes.
And I picked it up, and I thought, oh, this is probably going to be a long, boring essay on why the income tax is not legal or anything like that. Instead, it was photocopies of every state back in 1913, 10, whatever, that showed that none of the – only about two states out of the 48 actually passed the income tax.
Yeah, it wasn't ratified. And the fact that it wasn't ratified didn't seem to matter, right? Because, well, we want this. The deep state wants this. In fact, frankly, that's probably the total birth of the deep state when you end up having Federal Reserve and, the banking cartel and the various other things. But we'll keep telling people that they're free. All right.
Yeah, exactly. And, people need to realize, that the graduated income tax is the second plank of the Communist Manifesto. And you people struggling, trying to figure out how do we get to this communist fiasco that we're all immersed in? Well, it's bought and paid for. You look at the 10 planks and we're there.
Yeah, let me see here. I just looked up. I probably should have looked up, but Irwin wrote quite a few books here. But he was a libertarian and a tax-resistant advocate, and he promoted literature in which he argued that the way in which the income tax in the United States is enforced upon people as a tax on one's time or wages is illegal and unconstitutional. And he made a very good point, but of course he was thrown in prison, for this belief. Of course,
well, of course, we know. Yeah. We both know that the law is not what the law says; it's what the judge says, and it's the judge.
It's like the Supreme Court. The Constitution is not what the Constitution says; it's what the Supreme Court has said about the Constitution. Right
there, you go.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just like the lawfare direct against Trump. It's not what the law is; it's what the judge says, and we're just all supposed to be good little sheeple and just go along with what our dictator says.
Uh-huh, yeah. At least we should see clearly the reality of it. And I know people will say, well, what would happen if we didn't have... The United States of America survived for, 124, 125, 130, 40 years off of tariffs and other sources of revenue rather than the income tax.
I'd like to say as a replacement... nobody likes paying taxes and so forth and so on, particularly when we see what they're being used for. But in my mind, the fairest tax, if you have to have one at all, would be some kind of sales tax, because you don't have somebody with a check, checking who's buying what, and it's anonymous.
And I would agree. Of all the taxation that if you had to do something like that, sales tax is probably the easiest to do. The easiest to do, but the point is, though, is that the income tax, in my opinion, is really about social engineering and controlling, because they want you taking your money and putting it in certain things. And that's why there are deductions and exemptions for some activity that it wishes to encourage. It's more of a social engineering tool, I think. Tom, I always appreciate the call. Thank you for making that, too. Okay, I'm going to squeeze a couple more in before we do news break, okay? But thanks. Let me go to line three. Hi, KMED, KCMD, Income Tax Day. Hi, who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill, good morning. It's Deplorable Patrick. Maybe you will remember, and I can't think of the guy's name right now, but he made a movie, and he died from making the movie. But he,
yeah, his name was Aaron Russo, is who you're thinking of. Aaron Russo, America from Freedom to Fascism. Remember the movie? Okay.
I do, and you do that. I do now. But the part I wanted to make a quick mention of is that in the movie, he's on camera in, I think, an IRS office, standing in the hallway talking to some high official, and Russo asked him, well, is this really legal under the law, or words to that effect? And then the official says, we'll show you it's illegal by arresting you and putting you in jail if you don't pay it.
I remember that. That was it. This is how we're going to show you the law. You will put you in jail and get you. Yep. That was it. That was it.
What a expose that was.
Yeah. And, of course, quickly sank out of sight. Aaron Russo was truly a great American, by the way, too. Let me go to line one. Hello, KMED, KCMD. Good morning. Who's this?
Yeah, Ron Grants Pass.
Hey, Ron.
In the home of the slave, in the land of the fee. We are in worse case situation than the feudal lords held over the people in the past.
And that's something to keep in mind here, because you understand that the founders ended up going to war with Great Britain over, what was it, maybe a 1 or 2% overall tax rate on the colonies, on the colonists in those days?
Yeah, but here's the little difference here. In the past, they had a king or somebody who had with the people. The people had an expectation that if they gave the king gold, silver, or some other worth that they present to the king in exchange for protection from hordes of invaders. And now we don't even have a protection. In fact, we have an enemy at the leading edge of our government.
Oh, yeah, you pay them and they leave the border open and leave you unprotected. Yeah, that is kind of insult to injury, isn't it, Ron?
Yeah, but you know what happened ultimately, like you brought up a little bit earlier, the Declaration of Independence came about, and that was the list of all the things that the government did that the people thought were as onerous and invading of their God-given rights. And so they so installed that in the form of a written paper.
Yeah, I'll be curious. You know what? I'd be curious to see if Gen Z, our youngest adults right now, if they're the ones that end up bringing in a new Declaration of Independence. It'll be interesting to see because, I don't know. Because, frankly, it's not going to be the older folks like you and me.
I find that that's going to be hard to believe because most people of that nature don't even know which end of a hammer to swing or what a screwdriver is.
Well, you never know. You never know because there's a certain way of looking at it that, you know how you always hear these Congress critters are all saying, well, we don't want to do this kind of spending because it's going to be a debt on our future children and grandchildren, right? And I'm thinking to myself, there will come a point in which those children will say, we're not going to pay it, and then we're off to the races. Okay, I appreciate the call there, Ron. Let me go grab one more before news. And hello, KMED, KCMD. Good morning, Tax Day. What are you thinking? Hello? You're on. Going once, going twice.
Yes. Bill?
Oh, my.
Yes, Lucretia.
Okay. Hi, Lucretia. What's up?
As far as human rights or rights, only the drug addicts have rights. They get to sleep in our park.
That's
you
right.
You and I.
Yeah, if you or I were to sleep in our park, we'd be arrested, right? Because we have assets.
Well, we have no human rights. Based on Klaus Schwab's little boyfriend or, happy homosexual thing, he said the other day, I heard him say, humans have no human rights. They have no human rights. I mean, and he said it this crudely. He said, if you cut a man open, you'll get blood, you'll see the heart, you'll see the liver, but you don't find any human rights. There's no human rights in there. Now, mountain exists and all that, but there's no human rights in a person.
Okay, well, it's that non-existent contract. Hey, interesting take on that, Lucretia. Got a roll right now. Call me back a little later about that, okay? I'd almost like to explore that more. It's 6:37. I'm running behind. It's typical. It's Monday. It's tax day and various other things. We got all sorts of stuff to talk about. News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Serna with your NBC5 Morning News Update. Today is the last day eligible Verizon wireless users can sign up for money from a legal settlement. The funds are for customers who used Verizon services between January of 2016 and November of last year. They can get up to $100 by signing up online or through the mail. The lawsuit alleges Verizon deceptively charged fees, which the company denies. People who accept the payouts lose any right to sue Verizon over the issues in the future. Then the Cracker Barrel in Medford has closed for good. This was the last location in Oregon after three other locations closed permanently last year. At the time, the company did the impact from the pandemic as the reason for the closures. Cracker Barrel has not given a reason for the Medford store's sudden closure. And as we get closer to fire season, the Oregon Department of Forestry says it's important to be aware of burn pile restrictions. According to ODF, people can burn in debris piles or burn barrels right now, as long as it's a burn day and they have the necessary permits. But beware, these burns can get out of hand with hot, dry, and windy weather conditions common during the spring. ODF's Natalie Weber says it's important to make sure once a debris burn is done, the ground is completely cool to the touch. That's a look at your morning headlines. For NBC5 News, I'm Natalie Serna, and have a great Monday.
An intelligent solution is shared with others. This is Randall at Advanced Air. Are you looking for a heating contractor to service your furnace or heat pump? Most of Advanced Air's work comes from clients referring us to their friends and family after a repair. Advanced Air strives to provide excellent service and maintain our 5-star rating on Google, Facebook, and BBB. As a Bryant Factory dealer, Advanced Air is grateful for loyal customers. Your referral is the greatest compliment on a job well done. Advanced Air and Bryant do whatever it takes to deliver best-in-class home comfort.
Make the intelligent choice. Visit myadvancedair.com.
Life's busy, and off is not an option. You need to be on the water, on the call, on the road. Life's waiting. Power on with Batteries Plus. Visit one of over 700 locations today.
The Bill Meyer Show, 106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD.
I was so far behind in talking to Melissa Henson this morning, the vice president of Parents Television and Media Council, that she called me, and I'm embarrassed about that. Melissa, I appreciate you. You have a rooster? Is that a rooster in the background there, Melissa?
It's a beagle, practically the same thing.
Oh! I was thinking, because I think you're in the Beltway, right? Thinking, what, they got roosters in the Beltway? Oh, man. Okay.
Sorry about that.
You know, I used to have a beagle when I was a little boy, and I remember him as, he was a fun dog in many ways, but he was neurotic. Is your beagle neurotic, too? Just curious.
No, not necessarily, but he's a pretty good intruder detector.
Oh, that's good. I remember him being a barker and a maker and noiser. So but you know, that's all right. That's all fine and good. Hey, well, that's good. I'm glad at least that he's not driven you to being mentally ill or crazy or anything like that, like some animals can do. But we actually wanted to talk with you about this. Parents Television and Media Council, by the way, nonpartisan education org, and you're advocating responsible entertainment. Boy, do you have a lot of work cut out for you. Okay. But in all seriousness, there was an interesting piece that you got involved with. This was a review of The Anxious Generation with Wall Street Journal columnist Peggy Noonan. And she was writing about the mental health crisis among the young. So it's actually a very serious situation, but you're always out there trying to protect the kids. Could you break down what Peggy was writing about and maybe your thoughts on this mental health crisis that we seem to be observing with youth in the United States?
Yeah. Well, this piece by Peggy Noonan was reviewing a book by Jonathan Haidt, who's a social psychologist. And my understanding is he actually started out to write a different book, looking more at how social media influences politics. But as he started diving into the data on social media, what he was seeing, the picture that was beginning to emerge, is how deeply damaging it has been to a generation of kids. And and, you know, both he and others who have looked at this have said, you know, other theories have been put forward as to what could be causing this so-called mental health crisis that's affecting Gen Z. But most of those other causes can be pretty easily dismissed or explained away. But the irrefutable fact is that this mental health crisis coincides with everybody having smartphones and everybody being on social media. So what they're seeing is, for example, rates of depression and suicide and anxiety in the United States rose by more than 50% between 2010 and 2019. Smartphones became widely available in 2012. The suicide rate rose by 48% for adolescents between the ages of 10 and 19, and for girls 10 to 14, it rose 131%. Loneliness and friendlessness among American teens began to surge around 2012. Academic achievement started to decline around the same time, with children scoring lower on math, reading, and science assessments. And Gen Z, the first generation raised with smartphones and social media, are showing less interest in getting married and having children. They're more likely to live with their parents, less likely to get jobs as teens.
Yeah, family formation very low on Gen Z at this point, too.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, could it just be a coincidence that the rise of the smartphone ended up, in other words, is correlation causation, you know, that those kind of arguments. Is there any way to break down then and get more granular in that, you know, in those claims that, yeah, well, it's not even necessarily the smartphone, but it's the software that's being run on the smartphone, such as the rise of social media, et cetera. Although my gut tells me you're probably right, and this person's claim is probably right about this, because I don't know if I could have survived high school with all the other social pressures if I had been having every aspect of my life out there for everyone to read and or comment and or make fun of me on. I don't know if I could have survived that when I think back to my own childhood.
Right. And I think we've seen, you know, now over the past 2 or 3 years, a number of congressional hearings, Senate hearings, where they've called in representatives from these various social media platforms, whistleblowers who've talked about the fact that, for example, Meta had internal data that said that they make body image worse for teenage girls. They had that data, but they did nothing to mitigate that effect. They've had whistleblowers that talk about the addictive features that are built into these platforms. You know, they're using the same sort of psychology and brain chemistry as people who design gambling casinos to keep people hooked on these platforms and keep them on there scrolling for hours and hours and hours. So I think that the data is pretty conclusive and it's pretty persuasive.
I guess the question would be then, what can or could be done, you know, about sort of a situation? Because, you know, if you talk to a parent and say, well, maybe you shouldn't buy your kid a smartphone, and they look at you as if you have two heads these days.
Huh.
What do you mean? What, my 6-year-old shouldn't have a smartphone? You know, going to school, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What happened if I needed to talk to this person? And of course, maybe it's because, you know, my generation, I'm a late boomer, you know, that kind of thing. You know, we were already starting to get pretty atomized even at that point. But parents would just drop you off at school. They didn't really think about you until you came home. I just did. Nobody was calling anybody, right? You know, I mean, just dropped them off. Hey, get out of my hair, kid. You know, you're the teacher's problem there for a while. I mean, we're kind of laughing about it, but you get that. I know you're not. I don't think you're as old as me, but there's a change.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can remember my mom would send me to school with a quarter in case I had to stay late so I could call home for a ride. And I don't think schools even have payphones anymore. So there is, I think, for a lot of parents, sort of a genuine concern, how do I reach my child if I need to reach my child? But, you know, these kids are not in these activities unsupervised for the most part. There's going to be an adult coach or somebody that's going to be, and you can always make sure that you have contact information for the coach. But I think this is, you know, it's going to take sort of everybody, a meeting of the minds, I guess, is the best way to put it. You know, parents need to get on the same page with respect to giving their kids smartphones, because there is that peer pressure aspect of it. Oh, everybody in my class has a phone. I need one too. Well, sorry, you're not going to have one. And I also happen to know that, you know, Susie and Jimmy and Johnny don't have smartphones. So you don't, not every kid in your class. So we need to, as parents, we need to sort of try to get on the same page with respect to smartphones. There's some organizations. There's one called Wait Until 8th, encouraging parents to wait until 8th grade to get their kids smartphones. I would say wait even longer than that, just because the data is so compelling as to the negative health, mental health consequences for giving your kids these devices at such a young age.
But, you know, Melissa, if we're already talking about, and parents groups are talking about waiting till eighth grade to get smartphones, what does this say then about the possible mental health issues with social media and adults? Or maybe adults are a little bit better developed and are able to better withstand it. I don't know. Maybe, you know, that's what we're facing right now. Any thoughts on that?
Theoretically, anyhow, I think adults are better equipped to deal with these things because, you know, we have enough lived experience to know that what we're seeing on these computer screens is not the reality. It's sort of a curated reality, right? You know that your friends aren't going to the Bahamas every weekend, but when they do, and it's a special thing, they're going to share those photos. But mm-hmm. we're smart enough and have enough experience to understand that what we're seeing is not their day-to-day reality. It's sort of a curated version of their reality to make their life look good. And teens don't have that level of discernment for the most part. And there's also, you know, a lot of social anxiety. If they see their friends hanging out and they're not included, they want to know why they're not included. So there are just all kinds of hang-ups that go along with being a teenager and insecurities and so forth that I think for the most part, adults are better able to manage.
Yeah, and the social media world has certainly added that to it. Like I was mentioning, and I'm dead serious, I just don't know how I could have survived my teenage years if everything I was doing was supposed to have been out there.
And there's also that lack of judgment and impulse control. And so kids make decisions in a moment that can impact the rest of their life, and they're not really thinking through the long-term consequences of, oh, what happens if I post this inappropriate picture online or if I text a girl who turns out not to be a girl, but a Nigerian scammer, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and then it ends up in today's surveillance world here, too, Melissa. Added to your permanent record, as the Brits would always used to talk about that. No, in all seriousness, there's that kind of talk. Are there any other cultures, any other Western cultures that are as into the smartphone as we are, or have any taken a push to maybe go the opposite direction and withhold it or really limit it with young children for a while? Or is everybody pretty much in on the, you know, the same kind of mania at this point in time? Do you know, over at Parents TV?
Yeah, well, I with the research that Jonathan Haidt did for this book, what he was seeing was very similar effects throughout many Western cultures. So this is not something that was unique to the United States.
Right.
You know, some people were saying, oh, well, it's anxiety because of the elections or because of this or that, things that were unique to America. But he was able to say, no, it's not these political factors. It's something different because it's affecting other Western cultures as well. But I know, for example, in the UK, they're considering bans on smartphones for kids under the age of 16.
Really?
And Florida recently passed a law prohibiting children under the age of 14 from opening social media accounts. We know that at least 30 other states are currently looking at bills to limit kids' access to social media. So this is a movement that's gaining momentum all across the country and around the world even.
Has there been any effort made to ban smartphones in public schools, in the classrooms in which, you know, hey, you just drop them in the bin when you come in and then maybe you pick them up when you leave school?
Yeah, there have been a few schools that have implemented those kinds of policies where the kids have to turn them in and they're, you know, sort of locked in until the end of the day. And the schools that have done that have reported that those programs have been very successful in improving academic performance. They've been very successful in reducing bullying, all kinds of positive consequences from limiting kids' ability to walk around with those phones in their pockets all day.
Yeah. I know that every now and then you'll see these inner city schools in which everyone's out there. Here comes the bully and here comes the big fight, right? And nobody's trying to stop the fight. All everyone's doing
they all
is,
have their phones out. They want to record it.
Yeah. They're all recording it. I'm thinking, wait a minute, you know, some kid's getting really hurt right now, and you're not concerned about that. You're concerned about, I guess, getting the likes or the reactions or whatever it is, and whatever, whether it's TikTok or whatever social media you happen to be plugged into. And there's a, it's kind of a dehumanizing effect in some ways, in which you're divorcing yourself from, I guess, in some ways, are we even surprised then that there is so much social atomization of younger folks not feeling as connected to their fellow man in some way?
No, I mean, I think when they do the post-mortem on whatever it was that finally killed Western civilization, we're going to find smartphones and social media are going to be implicated in that. I think these things have really destroyed every pro-social impulse these kids might have had or might have grown up with. Instead, it causes them to be, you know, navel gazers who are only concerned about getting likes and reactions on their social posts. It's really a terrible thing.
It is kind of a endorphin hit or whatever they call it, dopamine, you know, dopamine
right.
hit. I know
right.
there have been studies on something like that. And it seems to me that if the social media world and the smartphone world had to go through, let's say, the same kind of studies before release to the public as, let's say, you know, a drug, you know, some drug or something, they probably would have been stopped a long time ago. Don't you find that interesting, really?
Yeah, I think unquestionably you're right. If they'd had to go through an approval process, there's no way it would have been approved for the market, especially knowing what we know now about how damaging it's been to an entire generation of kids.
But the high-tech world and the social media world is huge, multi-trillions of dollars, you know, backing that. Where do you think is going to be the lever to push, or what lever can be pushed or worked on here? And I don't know if the federal government is so dysfunctional in some ways. I don't know if they're really going to be the place to go or not. What are you thinking about that, Melissa?
Well, we have the Kids Online Safety Act, COSA, which was introduced by Senator Blackburn and Senator Blumenthal, I think, was the co-sponsor.
So that's a bipartisan one, huh? Okay.
They now have over 60 senators that have co-signed on that particular piece of legislation. I think the House version was recent. The House companion bill was recently introduced. So I would encourage your listeners to reach out to their representatives in Congress and encourage them to support the House version of COSA and see if we can get something going on Capitol Hill to help protect kids and keep them safe from these really predatory behaviors.
So you think the feds really could actually do something and accomplish something with this? What would it do? Can you tell us the basics of it, please?
Yeah, so the Kids Online Safety Act does a couple of things. One is it establishes a duty to care. So if it's foreseeable that kids might be harmed by being on these social media platforms, it holds the social media companies liable for those harms. If it's at all anticipated or could be anticipated that a child might develop a eating disorder because of content that they're seeing on Instagram, or if it's at all foreseeable that they might kill themselves after seeing videos that are, you know, pro-suicide.
Yeah. Does it pierce the what's that section?
Section 230.
Does it pierce that then? All right. Okay.
Yeah. And there are a lot of other pieces of legislation out there also designed specifically to sort of take down the Section 230 protections that social media has benefited from over the last decade or two.
Does it permit litigation on something like that? Because it seems to me that there's nothing like having a bunch of, of ambulance chasers that sometimes fix something like that, you know, get involved. Yeah, I hate to put it this way because we hate all the lawyers until we need one, you know, and then we love our lawyer, I guess. But what are you thinking?
Yeah. I'm not sure with the Kids Online Safety Act specifically, but I know, for example, the Florida bill that just got signed into law, you can sue. They can sue the social media companies if they allow kids on the platform. And I know California is also looking at bills that would actually hold strict liability for social media companies. So, so a lot of different state and federal efforts aimed at exactly that.
What will the kids do, though? You know, if they were restricted from this, what would they do? Melissa?
They might go outside or get a job.
It could be. It could be. You know, I have to say it's at least a thought-provoking situation. I don't think that there's anyone among us who is adult and understands what social media has been doing. I've seen what it does to adults. I can only imagine what it's doing to kids. Gen Z, the first generation that has grown up completely online and within the social media world here. So, oh boy. I'll tell you what I'll do. I will link to your site there, parentstv.org. Do you have a way where people can find out about the Online Safety Act that you were talking about? Is it like right there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have a parents resources section on our website with lots of tools and tips and ways for folks to get involved and take action.
Yeah. Responsible entertainment. Like I said, I think you're going to have a never-ending job the way things are looking right now. By chance, you seen any movies lately? Anything you liked?
I finally watched The Boys in the Boat. I thought that was great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, I know it came out a few months ago. Behind the times.
But... All right. I would have thought you would have went to see Civil War 2024 over the weekend. I thought that would have been... You weren't there, huh?
No. I was... Well, I generally wait for things to be available on streaming just because I don't like the cost of movie theater tickets.
Yep. And of course, the wonderful popcorn with the fake butter-like substance drenching it, too. That's another good one. Hey, Melissa, always a pleasure talking with you at Parents Television, Parents Television and Media Council, parentstv.org. And we'll have you back. You be well. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for the work. It is 6:58 at KMED, KCMD.